Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in the next half hour, we're going to take a look at a subject that we've touched on at considerable length over the years, namely the P2 Lodge headed up by Italian fascist and a reputed SS collaborator Licio Gelli. Gelli was an honored guest at Ronald Reagan's inauguration in 1980 and has been a kingpin in Italian and international politics over the years. Licio Gelli was nicknamed in Italian politics Il Venerabili, or the Puppet Master, and he basically used the P2 Lodge as sort of a crypto-fascist government that, for all intents and purposes, ran Italy through much of the 1970s and 80s, and which had much to do with Italian politics in the years since. The P2 Lodge also had branches in other countries, and notably Argentina, and members of the Argentine P2 played a key role not only in the Argentine junta, but also in other activities throughout the Americas, including the 1980 Bolivia cocaine coup that we discussed in RFA programs 19 and 27, and also the formation of the El Salvadorian death squads, and also the development of the Contras in the early 1980s. One of the key people involved with all of those activities was Carlos Suarez Masson, a key member of the Argentine junta that conducted the so-called Dirty War in the 1970s. And Suarez Masson had other P2 members in that very same junta. One of them was Admiral Emilio Massera and also General Jorge Videla. All of them were members of the Argentine P2. I suspect that there may be some listeners who, through no fault of their own, are not fully aware of the significance of the P2, or perhaps have poo-pooed it. And so for that reason, we're going to underscore the profound role that Carlos Suarez Masson and his fellow Argentine P2 members wielded in the Americas. The Argentine junta, including members of the P2, have once again come into public focus as a result of an indictment in Spain handed down by Judge Baltazar Garzon. That indictment was discussed in the San Francisco Chronicle of Wednesday, November 3rd of 1999. This is an article by Anthony Fiola of the Washington Post. It's Dateline Buenos Aires, Argentina, headlined, Spanish Judge Indicts Argentine Ex-Military Leaders. This reads in part as follows. A crusading Spanish magistrate who won the arrest of former Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet indicted Argentina's former military junta leaders and dozens of their lieutenants yesterday on charges of torture, terrorism, and genocide during the infamous Dirty War against left-wing subversives from 1976 to 1983. Skipping down. In yesterday's sweeping indictment, Garzón named Argentina's former president Leopoldo Galtieri, General Jorge Videla, former Navy Chief Emilio Massera, and 95 other military officers who presided over 7 years of terror in Argentina when more than 15,000 people were killed or disappeared. Videla and Massera, two of those indicted, were members of the Argentine branch of the P2. Again, that branch was discussed at considerable length in RFA Program 19, and a member of the Argentine P2, who I believe is now deceased, has wielded a profound influence on the history of the Americas in the 1980s and also the 1970s. That was the aforementioned Carlos Suarez Masson. Masson, by the way, and the activities that he helped to precipitate overlap those of Augusto Pinochet in the form of, among other things, Operation Condor. Operation Condor has been discussed in numerous RFA programs, including RFA Program 19, and it was also touched on in For the Record segment 131. Operation Condor was an assassination consortium conducted by numerous Latin American dictatorships, and with not only the tacit approval but the apparent collaboration of some elements of U.S. intelligence. Note again my use of the term elements. I'm not indicting the entire U.S. intelligence apparatus in these activities, but certainly some key elements of it, including elements associated with George Bush, were involved. And the best-known victim of Operation Condor was Orlando Letelier, blown up in Washington, D.C. in September of 1976, when George Bush was head of the CIA. Now, again, Carlos Suarez Mason, a member of the Argentinian junta, which is once again back in the news as a result of Judge Garzón's indictment, and also a member of the Argentine branch of the P2, had much to do with shaping terror and bloodshed in Latin America in the 1970s and 1980s. In addition to Operation Condor, Suarez Mason helped to precipitate the cocaine coup in Bolivia in 1980 that we discussed in RFA program number 27. He also was involved with the formation of the Contras, and also his activities involved with the formation of the Contras, and also with the formation of the El Salvadorian death squads. For our account of the profound influence wielded by Carlos Suarez Mason and his milieu and associates on the history of the Americas in the 1970s and 80s, we're going to turn to a very important text entitled Cocaine Politics, subtitled Drugs, Armies, and the CIA in Central America, that book co-authored by Peter Dale Scott and Jonathan Marshall. It's published in soft cover by the University of California Press and copyright 1991. And of Suarez Mason, his association with the Argentinian junta and the P2, and his seminal activities in Latin America in the 1970s and 80s, we read the following courtesy of Messrs. Scott and Marshall. Turning to cocaine politics, we find Suarez Mason owed his ascendancy to the secret Italian Masonic lodge known as Propaganda Due, or P2. Its goal in Italy was the creation of a secret, authoritarian state through the recruitment of top politicians, business tycoons, military leaders, and intelligence chiefs. In Latin America, it created a parallel network concentrated in Argentina and Uruguay. In 1986, Argentina's interior minister branded the P2 group, quote, an enormous criminal conspiracy which aimed to take power in the country, unquote. The P2 network reportedly raised money from the South American drug traffic and other criminal sources. Suarez Mason was a member of this exclusive secret society. So was José López Rega, a Rasputin-like figure who returned from Spain to Argentina with Juan Perón in 1973. López Rega took over the powerful Ministry of Social Welfare, which put him in charge of the police and unofficially of the Argentine Anti-Communist Alliance, or AAA, a notorious death squad that collaborated with Omega 7, the drug-linked Cuban exile terror organization, and later contributed personnel to the Contra training teams. The same year, Suarez Mason was promoted to general and put in charge of Army Intelligence. By the way, Omega 7 and some of the Cuban fascist elements, as well as Mason and his activities, were part of what freelance Danish journalist termed the Internationale Fascista. That was in his landmark book, The Great Heroin Coup, published in soft cover and hardcover by the South End Press, copyright 1980. More about General Carlos Suarez Mason and his role in Latin terror in the 70s and 80s. When a coup ousted the Peronist government in 1976, López Rega went back into exile amid charges that he had financed his conspiratorial activities through wholesale trafficking in cocaine. Suarez Mason, however, kept rising. In 1976, he was appointed commander of the 1st Army Corps in Buenos Aires. By the end of the 1970s, he had become head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He retired from the military in 1981 and ran the state oil monopoly YPF until 1982. Suarez Mason put his doctrine of ideological frontiers into practice through what became known as the Andean Brigade. By the way, the doctrine of ideological frontiers basically maintained that even though a political opponent may have left the country, he was still to be pursued and destroyed because ideology knew no frontiers. And that was the concept alluded to here of ideological frontiers. Returning once again to cocaine politics and reprising a portion of what we just read, Suarez Mason put his doctrine of ideological frontiers into practice through what became known as the Andean Brigade. Quote, it was a sort of secret foreign legion whose job was rooting out communists wherever they happened to be, especially the Montoneros guerrillas and those assisting them, unquote, says Jack Blum, former chief counsel of the Senate Subcommittee on Terrorism and Narcotics. Again quoting, the Argentine military became convinced the Montoneros were doing business with drug traffickers, so they moved in to establish their own connections with the traffickers and to finance their operations out of drugs. The Bolivian cocaine coup helped fund their Andean brigade. That coup took place in July of 1980, toppling a short-lived civilian government. Argentina's president, General Videla, hailed the takeover for preventing, quote, a situation in the heartland of South America that would amount to what Cuba represents in Central America, unquote. Argentina moved almost instantly to recognize the new military regime. And no wonder. Argentina had infiltrated agents into Bolivia to work with military plotters, and with Klaus Barbie, the escaped Nazi war criminal and former U.S. intelligence agent who was their close ally. Suarez Mason and his fellow officers put an Argentine intelligence specialist in charge of the operation. One of his key agents was on the scene as an advisor at Bolivia's military intelligence school. In all, the Argentines had as many as 200 military personnel in Bolivia to coordinate the seizure of power. One of the more significant Argentine military intelligence officials was Alfredo Mario Mingola, M-I-N-G-O-L-L-A. Trained by the Israelis, he had worked for the right-wing military intelligence services of Honduras and Guatemala between 1976 and 1980. After helping to overthrow the Bolivian government, he stayed on in that country as an advisor to the military junta on, quote, psychological operations, unquote. After a stint in Guatemala working primarily with the North Americans, he returned to Bolivia where he was arrested in November of 1982 for plotting to assassinate the Bolivian vice president. In 1987, he was again arrested, this time by Brazilian authorities in São Paulo for carrying 357 kilograms of cocaine. Yet another Argentine agent involved in the Bolivian coup was Stefano Della Chiai, an Italian fugitive wanted for numerous bombings and political killings at home. A condor assassin for Chile, Argentina, and possibly other governments, Della Chiai had organized for Dina the attempted murder of former Chilean opposition politician Bernardo Leighton in Rome in 1975, an act for which the drug-trafficking Cuban exile group CNM, which also worked for Dina, claimed credit. By the late 1970s, Della Chiai had moved to Argentina, with whose AAA death squad he had long collaborated to work full-time for its military regime. He hoped to make Buenos Aires, Suarez Mason's base of operations, an international neo-fascist center. By the way, I would add that Della Chiai became a key member of Klaus Barbie's Fiancés of Death, his Coca Fascisti. Another member of that same group of fascist mercenaries was Pierluigi Pagliai, who was a member of the Italian branch of P2. Pagliai, an Italian native. Continuing with Scott and Marshall's account of Suarez Mason's activities, we read, by the late 1970s, and overlapping with the passage that we've just read, by the late 1970s, Della Chiai had moved to Argentina, with whose AAA death squad he had long collaborated, to work full-time for its military regime. He hoped to make Buenos Aires, Suarez Mason's base of operations, an international neo-fascist center. Along with several other European extremists enlisted in the cause of preparing a coup in Bolivia, Della Chiai assumed the guise of an Argentine intelligence officer and began working with Bolivian Colonel Luis Arce Gomez. Della Chiai called his international team of assassins the Phoenix Commando. The Argentine junta backed them by increasing the size of its military mission in the Bolivian capital of 70, quote, including in their number several notorious veterans of Argentina's dirty war, unquote, according to one book. On June 17, 1980, a month before the coup, six of Bolivia's biggest traffickers met with the military conspirators to work out a financial deal for future protection of their trade. This collaboration was no secret, even then. One remarkably prescient news account reported later that month, quote, a leading businessman in La Paz has suggested that the possible army takeover next month should be called the Cocaine Coup, unquote. And indeed, that name branded the July takeover for all time. The coup itself, on July 17, 1980, was a bloody affair marked by mass arrests, beatings, and torture. Such tactics bore the stamp both of Argentina's military, which prepared computerized lists of opposition figures to imprison, torture, and kill, and of the foreign mercenaries who stayed on to advise and train paramilitary security squads for the government. These mentors continued to influence the new regime's course, quote, at least 40 Bolivian officers have traveled to Argentina to study, quote, anti-subversive techniques, unquote, Newsweek reported in late 1981, again quoting, and Argentinians practiced in torture are serving as interrogators, unquote. The repression was organized by Interior Minister Luis Arce Gomez, the same colonel who had employed De La Quiay to prepare for the coup. Arce Gomez became notorious for his ruthless methods against political opponents and quickly gained further infamy for his open collaboration with Bolivia's cocaine lords. Within days of taking power, Arce Gomez, a cousin of Bolivia's premier cocaine trafficker Roberto Suarez, began releasing convicted smugglers from prison and recruiting them into his paramilitary squads. He went into direct partnership with some of the biggest smugglers and taxed others for protection. One alleged buyer of his cocaine was the drug ring implicated in Operation TikToks, including three Cuban exiles who later threw their support behind the Contras. Arce Gomez delegated his neo-fascist militants under the leadership of Klaus Barbie to protect Bolivia's major cocaine barons and transport their drugs to the border. These mercenaries proudly called their criminal strong-arm squad the Fiancés of Death, unquote. One of their number, a German neo-Nazi, later testified that De La Quiay also acted as a liaison between the Bolivian military and the Sicilian drug mafia. Only a month and a half after Bolivia's cocaine coup, many of its chief organizers celebrated Argentina's successful export of drug-financed military-style revolution. The venue for their victory party was a meeting of the Latin American Anti-Communist Confederation, or CAL, held on September 2, 1980, in Buenos Aires. Hosting the conference was General Suarez Mason himself. In attendance were his agent De La Quiay and the man they had just put in charge of Bolivia, General Luis Garcia Meza. Also on hand were the godfather of Guatemala's death squads, Mario Sandoval Aracon, and his Salvadorian protege, Roberto Dabuisson, who only 6 months earlier had apparently ordered the assassination of Archbishop Oscar Romero. For Dabuisson and his Argentine hosts, the meeting proved fruitful. Quote, within 2 months, at least 50 Argentine unconventional warfare advisors were dispatched into El Salvador to assist their anti-communist compatriots. They helped their students perfect the counter-terror tactics so well that the extent of the dirty war in Argentina would be dwarfed by that in El Salvador. For both Suarez Mason and De La Quiay, the victory was short-lived, however. In July of 1982, just as a new civilian government was coming to power in Bolivia, De La Quiay fled before Italian authorities could have him arrested for acts of terrorism in Europe. He crossed the border into Argentina and came under Suarez Mason's protection in Buenos Aires, where he reportedly teamed up with another émigré, Arce Gomez, who had fallen in a recent coup. Later that year, De La Quiay reportedly visited Miami with a heroin-trafficking leader of the Grey Wolves, a right-wing Turkish organization. In 1987, De La Quiay was arrested by the Venezuelan secret police, DISIP, who stumbled across him while looking for some cocaine traffickers. In his Caracas apartment, the agents reportedly found evidence linking him to drugs and international terrorism. Suarez Mason, too, was forced into exile when Argentina's military regime crumbled after its humiliating defeat in the Falklands War. With the election of a new, democratic government in December of 1983, Suarez Mason fled. 4 months later, according to a sworn deposition by his wife, he was granted an interview with the State Department. In November of 1984, Argentina's civilian government issued an international warrant for his arrest, accusing him of working with drug and arms traffickers in a conspiracy to overthrow the new government. In 1985, he was reported by the Italian press to be, quote, entrenched in Miami, unquote, and to have become, again quoting, one of Latin America's chief drug traffickers, unquote, along with Bolivia's former president, General Garcia Meza, of course, interrupting. Suarez Mason helped to install Garcia Meza in the coup that was described earlier, that coup achieved by Suarez Mason's Andean Brigade. Continuing, U.S. authorities finally arrested him in 1987 and, after a long extradition proceeding, deported him in May of 1988. His attorney in that case, Joshua Prada, P-R-A-D-A, was indicted a few months later in a huge drug conspiracy case with Pablo Escobar, he by the way of the Medellin cartel, and Jose Gonzalo Rodriguez Gacha, two leaders of the Medellin cocaine cartel. By the time he fell, however, Suarez Mason's narco-terrorist methods had left an indelible mark on the Contras and the Reagan administration's approach to the covert war against the Nicaraguan Sandinistas. In the late 1970s, as part of Argentina's war of ideological frontiers, Suarez Mason began exporting dirty war veterans to several Central American countries to provide leadership to local military death squads. Argentina's involvement included, quote, the training of more than 200 Guatemalan officers in interrogation techniques, unquote, i.e. torture, and repressive methods, unquote, the creation with Israeli specialists of a computerized intelligence center in that country, and the dispatch of similar, quote, consultants, unquote, to Honduran security units led by Colonel Gustavo Alvarez Martinez, who had studied military doctrine in Argentina. Having also worked with the tough National Guard of Nicaragua's Anastasio Somoza, the Argentine military was a natural ally of those National Guard veterans, some of them also graduates of Argentina's military academies who formed the fledgling Contra movement in Guatemala and Honduras in 1981. In Central America, this aid was coordinated with CAL by Death Squad leaders Mario Sandoval Alarcón of Guatemala and Roberto Dabuisson of El Salvador, both of whom attended the September 1980 CAL convention in Buenos Aires with Suarez Mason. One particularly close ally of both Dabuisson and the Argentine secret police was right-wing Salvadorian businessman Francisco Girola Beche, B-E-E-C-H-E, who was suspected by U.S. Customs of smuggling cocaine and arms and laundering money. Yet, in a deal that has never been fully explained, the U.S. government dropped most of the charges against him in a 1985 money smuggling case, supposedly to avoid jeopardizing his future chances of emigrating to North America. And skipping down, more about the Argentine assistance to the Contras, note here that one of the people who helped to cement the Argentine-Washington-Contra alliance was General Leopoldo Galtieri, who has just been indicted by Judge Garzón in Spain. Skipping down in cocaine politics, we read, the Washington visit of General Leopoldo Galtieri, head of Argentina's military junta that same August, helped confirm that country's own commitment. With Argentine and U.S. money behind them, the Argentine-trained former Somoza National Guards led by Bermudez also came together in August of 1981 to form the Nicaraguan Democratic Front, or FDN, the main coalition of Contra forces. Bermudez is Enrique Bermudez, a key Contra leader. Continuing, John Prados describes what happened next, quote, 50 Contras were sent to Argentina for training, supposedly to become instructors at camps in Honduras. Colonel Jose Olas Orjoes, alias Julio Villegas, became chief of Argentine logistics. Another colonel named Osvaldo Ribeiro became the chief of operations, supervising a cadre of about 50 advisors in Honduras and Costa Rica. Argentina appointed its army intelligence chief as ambassador to Panama to coordinate the Central American operation. In each of the countries where they set up training units, the Argentine advisors encouraged violence and political assassinations. And by the way, next we're going to talk about somebody we talked about in For the Record segment 131, a key Argentine intelligence official and Contra collaborator named Leandro Sanchez Reisa. Continuing, still other Argentine personnel, according to one of their number who defected, went to Miami, quote, where other companions of theirs were trained in the same way in paramilitary anti-Castro Cuban-North American training camps, unquote. At least two Argentine military intelligence officials were assigned to Miami. Leandro Sanchez Reisa, a leading member of the Argentine intelligence unit known as Battalion 601, was put in charge of financing and currency exchange, quote, buying special equipment that couldn't be acquired through normal channels, unquote, and making contact with, quote, anti-Sandinista groups in Florida, unquote, in particular Alpha 66 and Omega 7. The far-right Alpha 66, which ran two Florida guerrilla training camps, was regularly represented at conferences of the Latin American Anti-Communist Confederation. Sanchez Reyesa may thus have played a role in recruiting, among others, two key anti-Castro Cubans into the Argentine training apparatus, José Dionisio Suárez, the fugitive accused killer of Orlando Letelier, who reportedly became a hitman for the Colombia cocaine mafia, and Felix Rodriguez, a former CIA security advisor to Bolivia and Argentina's First Army, Suárez Masson's unit, and confidant of George Bush's former national security aide, Donald Gregg. Sanchez Reyesa also audited the finance of the Argentine Special Task Group in Honduras. His contact there reportedly was Oliver North's representative, Robert Owen. Sanchez Reyesa denied accusations by the Argentine press and government that he financed some of his activities with the help of other Battalion 601 officers through the kidnapping and ransom of wealthy Latin American businessmen. His superior in the Miami-Honduras operation was Raúl Guglielminetti, who took an intelligence course with Sanchez Reyesa in the United States in 1976. Guglielminetti reportedly established cover through a coin and pawn shop in Miami called the Silver Dollar, that was later sold to a CIA-connected Cuban exile. He put Sanchez Reyesa in charge of administering the business and its covert weapons purchasing arms. Through such channels, Argentina played the dominant role in directing the Contras through 1982, despite the strain in U.S.-Argentine relations during the Falklands War and the subsequent decrease of support from Buenos Aires. FDN leaders have said that, quote, decisions on timing, training, logistics, and targets were made by the Argentines. The Argentines were also the paymasters, unquote. Argentina also trained and built bases for the Mosquito Indians in their struggle against Sandinista domination. Not until mid-1983 did the CIA buy into the Argentine operation to the point where Washington gained full control over the rebel army. Early in 1984, after the Alfonsín government took charge, Argentina finally wrapped up its aid program. Its review of military records indicated that unbelievable sums of money, unquote, had been sent into the Special Tasks Group in Central America without any accounting. And again, the godfather of these operations, described in part in RFA 30, RFA 19, and For the Record segment 131, among other programs, the aforementioned Argentine P2 member, Carlos Suárez Masson. And again, the activities of the Argentine junta, once again coming into sharp international focus as a result of Judge Baltazar Garzón's indictment. I've made allusions to numerous tapes that will contain more background and can flesh out listeners' understanding of these activities. Those tapes are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, Spitfire. They're located at P.O. Box 1179, that's in Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. The email address is spitfire@ix.netcom.com. There's also a website, spitfirelist.com, one word, spitfirelist.com, that not only contains a lengthy list and detailed description of the various tapes available from Spitfire, it is also equipped with real audio so that listeners can hear the tapes going out to the various stations that carry this program during the week that they go out. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.